Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Today on ADP Chasing, we are, for the first time in the show's history, bringing in a guest that has watched more than a single snap of football. It is, of course, the preceptor of receptions, the king of fantasy at Yahoo Sports, Matt Harmon. We're going to help you identify edges in the best ball market at wide receiver in a year where prices are higher than ever. This is ADP Chasing. Let's go.
Pat Fryer-Helmo.
This is why. This is why I'm hot.
Anita Hanjob.
Fix your sight.
Jamar. Alpha play chase.
Are you kidding me? Kadarius Toney?
You can't handle the heat.
It looks like we're finally at this point. You're right.
How's everybody doing? Matt, thanks for joining us. You have a good 4th of July holiday week.
Oh, yeah, man. I was off for the first time, you know, in forever. Took the full week off to not think about both work, reception and Yahoo combined, and also moving across the country. Didn't think about either of those things for a week, and now it's like smacking me in the face being back today. Yeah, that's the post-vacation anxiety slapping me in the face all at once, but I'm happy to not think about at least the anxiety part here for the next hour or so with you guys. So I appreciate you guys having me. Way too kind of an introduction, and I'm excited to chop it up today.
Awesome.
Happy to have you.
Great to have you on.
Yeah, happy to have you.
Very excited to talk about Deontay Johnson and Brandon Ayuk.
Oh, great.
Kadarius Toney.
Well, and Kadarius Toney. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of thinking about reception perception and ESPN open score and like how to leverage these things to draft teams. So I'm looking forward to a robust conversation.
Yeah. Should be awesome. Man.
Yeah. Before we get started, I think just to give the listeners a heads up, we're basically going to be looking through just wide receiver ADP today, a little bit different from the normal show outline, and talking through Matt's reception perception data and maybe trying to help find edges at ADP. But before we go into that, Matt, if you want to just give like our listeners who maybe, I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with you, but just give people a quick overview of what you do at Reception Perception, sort of, you know, rough outline of your process, that kind of thing, just to help people kind of get grounded in what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, I think all of us that play fantasy or like watch the NFL on a really intense basis, we all kind of inherently understand that wide receiver production is, I mean, it's one of the most, I would say they're like the position is overall the most dependent on like outside variables to go right in order to accrue production. I think we all kind of understand that basically any yards, target, any metric that involves that stuff is taking in the variable of the quarterback, the environment, the offensive play caller, you know, like you need the offensive line to block the play correctly. So my goal almost a decade now in that, it seems crazy to say that I've been doing reception perception for almost about 10 years here, has been to try as best possible to isolate wide receivers from outside variables. So what I do is over an 8-game sample for NFL players and college players is go in and chart, like you said, more than a single snap, chart every single route that they run, every single snap where they line up. Cause I think that's where the discussion has to start is, you know, we talk about like outside receivers and slot receivers a lot in fantasy, but when you really want to break down exactly like what these guys are doing, is a huge difference between like what the X receiver and what the flanker receiver is asked to do. So that's where everything starts basically. And then from there, it's how often do they run each route? How often do they get open on each route type? How often are they getting open against man, zone, press coverage? So really, again, trying to, the goal with reception perception is to isolate the player as much as possible from outside variables. And then again, really try to understand what bucket they fit in at the position. And really then, of course, you know, just like how good are they, right? Because we like to think that volume finds, or talent finds volume, opportunity finds talent. So really, I think it's just the starting point of how you've got to understand the receivers, you got to watch them play, and then everything else comes from there.
Yeah, two things I really like about what you're adding is what's happening when receivers aren't targeted. That's something that for like a long time we had like no real information on. And then something I've been really enjoying digging into the numbers this offseason is just stuff like, you know, you mentioned the flanker, the exposition stuff. You track how often the guys are lining up on the line of scrimmage, which I haven't seen elsewhere. I think that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, that to me is funny. Like there are statements I said about, you know, the overall, like, well, not the overall, but like the success rate versus man zone press coverage statements, even in reception perception, that I wouldn't have said, like, I wouldn't not say now, but like 8 years ago, I was like, oh yeah, you know, because this guy's bad in man coverage, he's bad. But if these guys are really good against, like, the example I always come back to is like Juju in his early career. I think like reception perception had him pretty pegged, and this is a guy that's a good player because he's good against zone coverage, but he's got clear weak points like against man and press. And I think that's put like a cap ceiling on who he's become later in his career. And like, I don't think he's a bad player. I just think he was a little overrated earlier. But the fact that he lines up off the line, the fact that he was lining up a lot in the slot in Pittsburgh and elsewhere, it gets him away from those coverages that he's not really good against. So like you said, like, I think that's really an important piece of the conversation that does get kind of lost. Cause you know, what these guys are doing when they're running that X receiver route tree, like a true vertical X receiver, they might as well be playing like a different position. Like Davis, you talked about Ayuk. That's a great example of like what Ayuk is doing versus like what Deebo Samuel's doing. It's like, it almost might as well be different positions, even though they're both labeled WR. And that's kind of an extreme example because Deebo's does backfield stuff, but yeah, I think it's important to kind of always start the conversation there.
I think the Juju example is interesting too, right? Because there was so much talk, and it's always hard in fantasy to like separate the noise from the signal, right? And there was so much talk that, oh, Juju's just a product of Antonio Brown taking away coverage, he's a slot guy. But at the time, if you're just looking at Juju's like raw stats, his yardage, his catches, and you don't look at where he's lining up in the field, you think, you know, he's on the path to be the dynasty wide receiver one, right? Like a lot of people had him ranked super high after that, right? So I think, like you said, understanding how a player wins is really important, and understanding that Juju great at what he does, or at least back then was, you know, really elite at what he did as a slot slot zone beater. But yeah, understanding that, because when you try to project him into that full X wide receiver role, it takes a little bit of extra skill to get there. So I think that's really an interesting one.
Matt, can you just kind of like give people a quick overview of how you see like the two outside positions, the flanker and the X? Because I mean, I think like I don't really get it fully. Like when I went to look, I remember Michael Pittman really jumped out to me as like, oh, I guess he's not the X because he's like a big wide receiver. I just like figured he was.
It depends on the offense too. Like not every offense is going to have a flanker because it's a designation from Dan Coryell's offense from the 1970s that like most of the modern passing game is built out of. But like, for example, Cliff Kingsbury's playbook, they probably would not have had a flanker. They would have had an X and a Y and a slot, and no one would have been designated the flanker because the route concepts are different. So it sort of depends on who's calling the plays and what verbiage they're using.
100%. Yeah. I mean, kind of verbiage is different across different offenses, but just from like a very basic high level standpoint, like that X receiver is going to be like tethered at the line of scrimmage. He's not going to be moving around pre-snap. Like a good example is Robert Woods with the Los Angeles Rams. Like he was always kind of their pre-snap motion guy because he was the off-ball flanker. And then like Brandon Cooks is that you typically want your X receiver to be somebody who's going to stress the defense out, which is kind of why like Alec Pierce is the X receiver in Indianapolis, just to come back to your Michael Pittman example. And they love to move Pittman around prior to the snap, you know, kind of get him on some quicker hitting routes. So you want your flanker, like it's great if your flanker is a big time man press beater too, like that's awesome, but you definitely want your Z receiver, your flanker receiver, to be good in the short to intermediate areas, and it's okay if he's more of a zone beater than a man beater. And then obviously again, the flanker position allows them to be moved around prior to the snap, and they don't necessarily have to, and it just depends, like Davis said, on different offenses and who your players are. Obviously we want coaches that are gonna coach to the personnel on the offense, but you know, the more like I think the Shanahan offense is a great one that they do typically have, that when that offense is functioning at its best, they have like a Julio Jones and Andre Johnson, like that big prototypical X receiver. Ayuk is kind of playing that role now. So that's kind of just a little bit of a high level. The main thing is, are they on the line of scrimmage or are they not? That's kind of the biggest difference between X and flanker. And then you can kind of get it over around from there.
Gotcha.
So just a, based on your data here, like Terry McLaurin, Mike Evans, DK Metcalf are kind of prototypical X receivers.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because we definitely do profile players based on size. You know, I everybody does it. I definitely think like, oh, you want that X receiver to be built like a Mike Evans, like that. But then, yeah, Terry McLaurin is not like the smallest guy in the world, but he is definitely like a prototypical X receiver that's not moving around prior to snap. And those guys definitely have the, I would say, you know, this is subjectively, but I think based on the routes that they run, the coverages that they face, like again, they're going to run into more tight physical press man coverage. They're not going to have the benefit of working the sideline, or they're going to be tighter to the sideline than these other players are. I think it's the hardest position of the three to play. So, you know, when you see a guy like a rookie like Drake London that comes in and runs out as that pure X receiver and plays it, in my opinion, extremely well, I think that like, that's a really good signal all in of itself.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, these discrepancies are like very useful, I think, in season, you know, I think like positional stuff, because you want to know who replaces for injury and stuff like that. But, you know, another key is people do miss on this with rookies. I think a pretty obvious example is like Devonta Smith, assuming, oh, and Olave, actually, like just thinking like these guys are small, fast, like they can only, you know, if you're 5'10", 178 pounds, it's like, oh, you're a slot wide receiver. And the paradigm has just changed in the NFL now. Like that just doesn't have to be true anymore.
I love that you brought up Devonta Smith, because that was one of the most like interesting things to me going into last season, because I was so, and this is how you know I have, you know, no life, is like, I was so fascinated as to where were these receivers in Philly going to line up, you know, like who was going to be the X receiver versus who was going to kind of be that pre-snap motion guy, flanker, you know, moving to the slot. Because like you mentioned, Davis, like we had multiple years of evidence that both as obviously a collegiate player when he won the Heisman, but as a rookie too, of Devonta Smith being excellent against press coverage, excellent against man coverage, and doing it from a true X position. But, you know, AJ Brown in 2020 and 2020, well, really 2019 and 2020, was an awesome X receiver for the Tennessee Titans. Like he had run out at that position, but then you saw him kind of in 21 accommodate Julio Jones, who's been one of the best X receivers, you know, of all time, and play as more of a flanker, play more in the slot that year. And I was interested to see, like, was the Eagles going to kind of put AJ Brown in that spot? Were they going to like move Devonta Smith around? But then what you saw them do last year was, yeah, Smith basically runs out as the X receiver and is incredible in that role too, by the way, which I think is a real credit to him. But then also then it gives them sort of matchup flexibility with AJ Brown to move him around the field.
That's nuts to me that Devonta, like, just from my very rudimentary understanding of like when I think Chris Olave, I'm like flanker. When I think AJ Brown, I'm like X. I'm like, okay, yeah, obviously AJ Brown's the X. I don't even need to check. Like, what? Devonta Smith's the X? That doesn't jive with kind of the basic understanding.
Because I think, and I mean, Matt, you can speak better to this than me, but like the things that it takes to be a successful X receiver aren't just size. And I think so many times we think of just like, oh, big guy, he can beat press coverage, but like the nuanced the nuanced aspects of like, you know, getting off the line of scrimmage, like beating that initial press coverage, sort of whatever, sidestepping, all that stuff. Like Devonta Smith is so technical and good at the very nuanced things, even though he's like, you know, all of our sizes basically, which is truly incredible. So
how different are these positions in terms of, because like one thing that strikes me about this is like, can I use this to predict snaps? Like, you know, the Giants wide receivers are one where I was like, oh, Isaiah Hodgins lining up on the line of scrimmage a lot. You know, maybe that gives him an advantage as we try to figure out where all these guys are going to go. Maybe he actually has more of a lead for the X snaps. And it's not all just there's three wide receiver spots or there's two outside wide receiver spots. Who's going to play outside? Like, how different are these responsibilities and duties? Is it to the point where we can say, like, look, I mean, this guy's shown the ability to line up on the line of scrimmage, play X. That gives him an advantage over the other guys.
I think it's a huge part of it. And the Giants are a great example because, like, let me tell you what, you're not running out a three receiver set of Paris Campbell, Wandale Robinson, and Sterling Shepard. And obviously, like, there's injury, and, you know, Sterling is one of the greatest reception what ifs of all time. So, all respect intended to Sterling Shepard, you know, beyond the injury problems that you're going to have with those guys. But yeah, like, you're not asking Paris Campbell to play X receiver. You're not asking Sterling Shepard when he's healthy to play X receiver. And you're definitely not asking Wandale Robinson to do it. And even like stretching those guys into some of those guys, you know, Sterling Shepard notwithstanding, like, I don't really think you're asking Wandale Robinson or even Paris Campbell. Maybe Paris Campbell can play like a flanker position. I actually think he might be better than like the kind of bunny hop slot receiver stuff he's done at different times in Indianapolis. He might be decent at that. But yeah, I think you can definitely use it to predict like who these guys are going to, who's going to line up in a three receiver set. Especially nobody likes when you talk about this either, but like that X receiver's probably got to be a pretty good blocker too. Like they can't be like a stone zero in the run game. And yeah. I think that's where we definitely get into problems when we profile guys as like route running X receivers, you know, versus like just big physical X receivers and everything like that. Like you said, these smaller guys can definitely run out there at that position, but you want your outside receivers to offer you something in the run game and two receiver sets. Again, Ayuk's a great example of that, that like, I think part of what got him out of the doghouse a couple of years ago was he was like blocking his ass off in the run game. And I think that makes him a good fit at that X receiver position too. So somebody with a little more size there in Isaiah Hodgins might provide them something different than what these other guys do.
Oh, we normally spend about 30 minutes per show talking about Isaiah Hodgins. So I'm glad yeah.
We still have 25 more. Don't worry. We'll get to it.
Sorry, I just have another. This is a bit.
Okay, late, yeah, but, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, one thing I was just curious about, like, sometimes, like, so Deontay Johnson and George Pickens both lined up on the line of scrimmage a lot. So, like, what's that also kind of goes against, like, what I thought, like, there's one guy who lines up on the line of scrimmage, one guy who's off the line of scrimmage is the flanker. How is it that, you know, those two guys must both be on certain plays lining up on the line of scrimmage?
At some points you do get a play call. I mean, Matt Canada does some weird offense stuff. It's not really one of my favorite offenses in the entire NFL for sure. But you also, those guys can at different times, you know, one guy can be the X receiver on the play and then the other guy can be the X receiver on a different play. I think they actually have a pretty interesting combo there, and that George Pickens is sort of that like prototypical throwback X receiver, a guy that's not necessarily, I would say, a great separator, but he is combative at the catch point. He does kind of profile as more of that player. I wouldn't say he's like going to, you know, he can be kind of a long, this is a guy I talk about on like every one of my shows, is like the Devontae Parker axis of X receiver, never a great separator, but really good in contested situations. I think he kind of fits into that bucket. And then Deontay's just been such a good separator and such a good route runner, despite being, you know, not an A-plus athlete and being a smaller guy. He's definitely a mistake prone player, but you know that, no doubt about that. But like he does get open, and he can do that at the X receiver position. So that gives him some flexibility to like, all right, we can start to take some of the off the line, because also Deontay's like all snaps on the line have gone down last year compared to the year prior, if I'm not mistaken. So like a lot of that is they had a guy this year that could be, or this past year that could do some of that X receiver stuff. But they also do some untraditional things where you'll get both those outside receivers on the line of scrimmage, or you'll get the receiver in the slot on the line of scrimmage. And then, you know, the flankers off the ball or the tight ends off the ball. So they do a lot of that with Pat Freiermuth too, where he's off the ball as well.
That's interesting.
Interesting. Cool. Well,
it's all interesting until you realize that Allen Robinson is getting 97 targets this year and there's nothing any of us can do. Dude, about it.
I could, there's, if you get enough beers in me, I could like fall ass backwards into like a Allen Robinson gets more targets than George Pickens, you know, like take this year.
I think that's if you gave me like 3-1 odds on that, I think I might take it because
I mean, to be honest, were their target rates that?
I mean, 3-1 odds last year.
They probably were closer than we want to admit even last year when Robinson was awful because Pickens was pretty low. But anyways, let's while we have Matt, I wanna get into some of this ADP debates for the top players. I wanna quickly like orient people to what the numbers we're gonna be showing are here. So these are the charts that you're probably familiar with Matt's stuff, success rate, success by route, and route percentage for different players. This week I dug into creating this metric, which is called success rate over expected. And I just want to quickly walk people through what that means so they understand it, because we're going to be talking about it on the charts. It's essentially a way, and I know Matt, you've actually written about this, condensing, you know, all of your work into a single metric is not the goal of reception perception, and it's way more nuanced than that. But just for the purposes of putting some stuff on charts.
We did it anyway.
Hey, part of putting out like data is that, you know, once it's out there, you kind of got to let it go in terms of like what people do with it. So,
yeah.
And hey, this is a lot better, Sam. What you've done is a lot better than taking like screenshotting one of the charts and being like, you know, here's some take that I would probably never have, but
yeah,
insert person on Twitter definitely has. And I'm like, all right, well, can't wait for this to come back to me in some way. But,
yeah. So I do want to say this is kind of my metric, and Matt is not like fully rubber stamping or endorsing it, but I'll explain how it works and then we can talk through it. So for Chris Olave, for example, you see a success rate by route and his route percentage. What you can do then, and this table here kind of illustrates it, we have NFL average success rates across all of these routes. So say, for example, look at the corner route. The NFL average success rate is 62% on those routes. Chris Olave last year had a 94% success rate on the corner, which is extremely good. So in that next row, success rate over expected, you see that on a corner rate, he had sort of a plus 31% success rate over expected on that route. Then, like, if you do that across all of the routes that a player runs and then weight it by the percentage of the different routes they're running, you get to an overall success rate over expected by route. So essentially what this does is, like, if a player has a really high success rate, but they're running a ton of easy routes, say like just a bunch of screens, you know, slants, curls, this metric will actually harm them a little bit. But if they have a low success rate and they're running a ton of, you know, tricky routes, nines, posts, corners, etc., this metric will actually make them look a little bit better. So that's essentially what this is doing. I also did this by route, and I also did this by coverage. So a very similar idea, but we can look at players' routes and success rate versus man double teams, man single teams, and zone. And basically, I'm not going to walk through it, but it's very similar math there. You can get to a success rate over expected by coverage. So you have those two numbers, and what I did is just average them. I said, there's probably some signal in that success rate over expected by route. There's probably some signal in the success rate over expected by coverage. I average them together. And that's essentially the number that's going to be showing up on these charts. Before we get into it, Matt, I'm curious, like, does this, I realize it doesn't cover everything. You do a ton more than this. Like, you track contested catch, you track yak. There's like way more to your analysis than just this, but I'm curious if you like your reaction to this metric, if you think it generally makes sense, or just any thoughts you have.
Well, I think that it makes so much inherent sense. And, you know, this is something I talk about a lot too, is that these guys who are running more vertical route trees, like there is a necessarily like a lower expected success rate when you're running a lot of nines, posts, and corners. You know, we talked about Pickens earlier. He's a guy who does a lot of that, and he does have some lower success rates, especially against zone coverage. Some of that might not necessarily be his fault, or would maybe be different if his route tree was mixed up a little bit. Christian Watson is another example from last year. But then you see a guy like Olave, and I'm glad, you know, Olave is a guy that you put here on the slide, is like, He's not running. He's running like an extremely vertical route tree, but has like a 75% success rate versus man coverage, which is extremely, extremely high, which is why I'm so bullish on him as a player. So he's a great example. And I think sometimes when you put example to something like that, it's why it kind of passes the smell test to me. Because, yeah, it's something I talk about all the time. Like, it starts with alignment for sure, but then you got to bleed into like what routes are they running, and that might be very, very different for a guy like Olave versus a Garrett Wilson from last year. Just another example to pit two rookies against each other.
Yeah, that makes sense. So and I think just like a way that I've thought about this, if you got lost in all the math there, totally fine, I get it. It's a lot of numbers, it's confusing. I'd say like generally success rate over expected in theory, you can think of it as how often a player gets open relative to expectation based on their route tree and their coverage faced. So that's more or less what this number is telling you.
And the route tree one, I think it could be important for fantasy because some of the deeper stuff like produces fantasy points in big ways, mm-hmm. right? We don't want to penalize Olave for running 9 routes in any way. Cause like give us those 9 routes.
Yeah, we want it's big.
Exactly. Yeah. So this now what we're gonna talk through, we'll go through the different sort of zones in the fantasy landscape this year. This is showing the round 1 and 2 wide receivers. So you see on this chart here a ton of studs. All these guys have above average success rate over expected. The baseline for players in rounds 1 and 2 is around a 5 to 6% success rate over expected. So these colors here highlighting the players that are, you know, doing a little bit worse or much better to that relative to where they're going in the draft. So, you know, I think this is interesting. Like, I think we should be a little bit pickier this year in terms of the wide receivers we're drafting very early just because their prices are so much higher. So, again, we're not saying like, you know, this metric isn't even saying Amon-Ra, Jalen Waddle, or T. Higgins are bad players. It's just saying, like, compared to everyone else in this range, they're not quite hitting on the level of, you know, the A.J. Brown, Diggs, Davante Adams. So I wanted to start with Amon-Ra. I think some of the stud guys on the left-hand side here, like, what's the point of talking about Stephon Diggs or Tyreek Hill? We all know those guys are just absolute studs. So let's dive into Amon-Ra. He shows up here with just a 1% success rate over expected. Again, that's still good. I think part of the reason why he doesn't flash as much as other guys here is one, he struggles on sort of some of the harder routes in your data, Matt, on the post and the 9. He has sort of a higher percentage of so-called easier routes, flats, slants, and screens. He also faced zone coverage a bit more than players in this range did. So that's why he shows up there. Yeah, just curious your thoughts on Amon-Ra sort of at the, you know, back half of the first round, early second round. What are your thoughts on him in that range?
Yeah, super unique role, right? I mean, we're talking about 3.8% of his routes were 9 routes, 4.2% of his routes were curl routes, 2.7% post routes, and 2.7% of his routes were corner routes. He's not run a lot of downfield stuff. He's running almost when he came into the league, I called him Bud Light Cooper Kupp. You know, and like the ideal role that he would play was that type of role. And I think that's, again, what he's gone on to play here with the Detroit Lions. So what he's doing is so different from, you know, a guy like A.J. Brown or Stephon Diggs, certainly, or, you know, any of these guys. He's running an extremely different route tree than these players. Yeah. So a lot of what I call Sam, like in terms of saying easy routes, just call him like he's run a lot of layup routes. Right. Like, and which is great for a quarterback like Jared Goff, who loves to throw those layup routes. We saw him do it with actual Cooper Kupp. We've seen him do it with this player now, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's tough though, because I mean, dude, like who is stretching the field here for the Lions in the first 6 weeks of the season when Jameson Williams isn't playing? Like, is it this version of Marvin Jones? Is it Josh Jones? It's like, I mean, it's tough to say. So can you run? Look, I don't think DJ Chark's a great player. I think he's, you know, he's lost a lot of juice after all the injuries the last few years. He's not really much of a separator, but he's a downfield ball winner that can stretch the field from that X receiver position in that way. I mean, I don't know that any of these other dudes are necessarily doing that. And, you know, can you run a healthy, functional passing offense? You know, is this guy going to score a lot of touchdowns in the first 6 weeks of the season? I mean, shoot, we also, by the way, like we're talking about Jameson Williams, we don't know who Jameson Williams is going to be. Right? There's a lot of projecting there. So
he might be John Baldwin, buddy.
Right. Right.
AJ Jenkins.
I mean, if he's Jalen Guyton, it still would help Amon Ross St. Brown, right? Like, I think
a little just bit, yeah,
back should help.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Amon Ross St. Brown, the player. You know, I was really bullish on him last year because he'd shown a lot of the skills that you want in this big power slot receiving role. You know, a guy that can beat zone coverage, a guy that's really good on those layup routes. But I think this kind of shows that there's some things that he's not as good at as some of these other players. Like, that's okay in when he's playing in this specific role from like an NFL receiver standpoint. But when you're thinking about it from a fantasy standpoint, like trying to hit a high ceiling, he's going to need a lot of things to go right. Cause even all the things went right for Cooper Kupp a couple years ago when he, you know, won the Triple Crown, he was awesome. But, you know, he had a quarterback that could stretch the field vertically. He had, you know, some receivers that could stretch the field vertically and Odell Beckham. And then obviously Robert Woods was good. And even Van Jefferson's like not a bad player either. So I don't know. It's just those same ingredients aren't quite there for Amon-Ra and the Lions, but he's definitely about to get a boatload of targets. It's just like how A, efficient are those targets going to be, and B, like how far down the field are those targets going to be? Probably not very far.
I think on Underdog specifically, St. Brown's price is, it's probably pretty bad. I don't see him developing into a 13 touchdown per season guy. Now that doesn't mean he can't do it once or a couple of times. I'm like, obviously I think he's very good. He got tackled at the one a bunch last year, and yeah, touchdowns are sort of noisy anyway. Reeves made this comp to me and I've never been able to get it out of my head, which is that he's Keenan Allen. You know, he is super dependable. He's going to catch 100 passes a year. But you are just going to be begging for 33-point weeks. You know, like what? You're going to watch DK Metcalf, you know, just put some poor 49ers cornerback in an early grave. And you're going to be like, you know, St. Brown is not doing that. Now, on DraftKings, which we have not talked about a ton here, I think he's way better, right? Because he's going to, like, PPR, those 10 catch games. I mean, shit, he could get multiple 10 catch games in that first 6 weeks before the combination of one, waiting for Jameson Williams to get back, and two, just figuring out like, can Sam Laporta play 80% of the snaps, or do we need to be playing Brock Wright for the first couple weeks anyway? And the Crane, I want your take on this, but like, it feels, especially, and this is backed up by the data, but like drafters getting scared of Davante Adams because Jimmy Garoppolo like may or may not be the court. Like, what are we doing here? Does anyone really think it matters if Brian Hoyer is there? Like, Davante Adams is just going to be Davante Adams. Zach Wilson could be his quarterback and I wouldn't be concerned. Like, what are we doing letting Davante Adams be? Like, I see Jalen Waddle go ahead of Adams. I got Adams at 16 in a draft last night. What are people doing?
I'm curious your thoughts, Pat, on that. Like, the Adams, Amon-Ra, Waddle grouping, to me, it's so clearly Adams, but Do you have anything else to say on like why? I don't know. Do you have a different take on that?
Well, I don't want to be underweight really any of these guys. So to me, like the thing with Adams is that he is now falling. So if I'm sitting at like 11, I think Adams might be more likely to get back to me, certainly than like a CD Lamb. So I've passed on Adams just to get exposure to the other guys. And also to be like, I would like my discount that everyone else is getting. But I don't really get it. I want to be overweight Adams, and I am.
We don't have to go really deep into this, but I have just been wanting to make this point, which is that we draft teams, like not exposures. So like, I'm not passing up on a guy I think is a good value just because I think I might get four more picks of value a couple times in August. Like I still want to be drafting Davante Adams instead of Amon-Ra St. Brown.
But I also don't want to be under... I guess my thing with Amon-Ra St. Brown is like, his chart's really interesting, his reception perception chart, because he is who he thought he was, is like my takeaway from it. Like, he does the things he does really well. He sucks at the things he doesn't do well. But like, he's with Jared Goff. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
That's not a problem. Like, who cares? Like, if he does the thing that you would want Jared Goff's primary receiver to do really well, and he does it exceptionally. So my goal with that group is to be as close to even on the non-Davante guys as I can, and then overweight Davante Adams, because I think he seems like a pretty big value when he's in the second round.
Yeah. Let's jump over to to Waddle. He's the other guy we've alluded to here. He also shows up. Again, 2% success rate over expectation is still good. I can't overstate that, but again, not as good as other guys in this chart. I think that, again, is primarily driven. He's definitely a different archetype than Amon-Ra, but he still did have a high percentage of his routes being flats, slants, and screens. This, again, this is also 2020 to 2022, so maybe part of that is baking in his routes from 2021, actually, which were a lot more in the short area than they were last year, I believe. His success rate versus man kind of plateaued from year one to year two. We didn't see a huge jump there. And he also, this is kind of a minor note, but he faced a low rate of double teams relative to a lot of these other wide receivers. And that actually is baked into this number a little bit. I'm guessing that's because obviously Tyreek Hill is on his team. So Waddle is not facing the same, you know, press double coverage that some of these other wide receivers are facing. So I think that's all baked into his number here. But Matt, I'm curious your thoughts on Waddle. Do you think he has the potential to jump up into sort of the next tier of guys? Or do you think this assessment that the chart shows of him being overvalued is accurate?
Yeah, he's a tricky one. And I'm glad you brought up the difference between year one and year two. Cause like, if you watch Jalen Waddle in college and then you watched him his rookie year, you'd be like, well, that's not like that. Like, his rookie year is not what he's really supposed to be doing. You know, that's really not like it. I mean, you definitely want him on some of these underneath and layup routes. Like, he's really good after the catch. Obviously, he's got it really, you know, he's got a ton of speed. But yeah, in his rookie year, 24.4% of his routes were slants, 14.4% of his routes were flat routes, you know, and then 5.2% of his routes were screens. All three of those numbers came down. Especially the flat route came down by almost like 50%, you know, which is great because he was certainly his best stuff as a year two player was like running dig routes, was running post routes, was running out routes and like beating zone coverage. And he's really good, I think, in that area. He's not like some of his stuff against press coverage is not, it's not bad, but it's not up to the level of some of these other players like an Olave or a Devontae Smith, or even especially like a Devontae Adams for sure. So I think there are some holes in his game, but still a really good player. And I mean, I think a great player. And, you know, is he like a 1B or is he a true, really good high end number two? I think that's kind of the, from a like talent perspective, that's sort of where I'm kind of juggling him a little bit. But it is worth noting too, and I think this is kind of be a good and a bad thing, that the Dolphins last year used Tyreek Hill. His numbers aren't up on the site yet from last year, but they will be by next week. He's a guy, they used him more off the line than they did Jalen Waddle. They had Jalen Waddle run like more of the X receiver route tree, as much as you can have like a true X receiver in that offense. He was more on the line, not doing as much pre-snap motion stuff. So like, again, that could be a good and a bad thing. It's a good credit to Waddle and what he did last year, but like the more like created touches stuff was definitely Tyreek Hill than it was Jalen Waddle last year.
Yeah. And that shows up in the targets data for sure. I think Tyreek had like 50 more targets than Waddle or something like that. Pat, curious, you mentioned you wanted to be at the field with Waddle. So yeah, curious, just like in your bull case for him, what makes you really excited about him in the second round?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, you talk about the route changing, you know, the mix of routes that he's running changing, because that definitely like, you know, worked its way up into ADOT, which is a number that I look at a lot and, you know, people will be pretty familiar with. His ADOT jumped from 7.0 as a rookie to 12.7 last year. And to me, like, that's
huge.
That's like two completely different types of receivers. Like, that's an underneath, like a limited underneath, you know, probably primarily a slot guy, ran 60% of his snaps in the slot, according to PFF, as a rookie. Dropped down to 26% last year out of the slot, mostly out wide last year, and his ADOT jumps to 12.7. It's like he literally became two different types of receivers by these numbers. And it sounds like that's backed up by the route data. And then
Waddle's interesting in that way too, just because, you know, I like made an offhanded comment in my Discord, you know, the other week, and set out and then like logged off and, you know, set off like kind of a firestorm. And I said like, yeah, you know, like ADOT's not always a, it's not like a wide, I said it was not a wide receiver stat. And what I meant by that is that it's not a wide receiver isolating stat, right? Because you can look at Jalen Waddle in 2021 with that like 7-yard average depth of target, and a lot of that is the circumstances around him. It meant he could do that stuff really well, but like if you took that 7 yard average depth of target and be like, well, he can't win downfield. It's like, well, again, no, we're talking about like, look at the guy's 9 route success rate, the dig route success rate, the out and corner route in his year one data in reception perception. Like, yeah, this guy can clearly win downfield. It's just his quarterback was not throwing it downfield. And obviously, you know, that offense was really weird with all the RPO, like quick hitting stuff anyway. So yeah, it's like sometimes, and this is not always the case. A lot of times like a guy's A dot is what it is. And like, it is very descriptive of the player, but I think this is a very good example where that's not always the case.
It's a role stat. I think, you know, yeah. It's like he was being used in that underneath role. He did it pretty well, but new coaching staff. And I love that, you know, we can go see like, okay, he's being used in this role, this underneath role. But what was his success rate on the deep stuff? Oh, it was good. Okay.
Yeah.
He gets used in a slightly different role now, which is exactly what happened. I mean, he jumped. The thing with me with Waddle is that the Tyreek, his efficiency and like just in terms of target earning and target per route run, all that stuff, like off the charts. And then you just go to Waddle. So like to compare him to Tyreek, he's going to look like, oh my God, is a clear secondary option. All stuff. As a second year player, he was unbelievably good. Like yeah. That's to me, that's the bull case for Waddle.
Yeah.
Like it's a very simple, clean bull case. Actually. It's like, let's stop talking about Tyreek Hill for a second and just focus on Waddle's numbers compared to what we would normally expect for a wide receiver to be drafted here. Like you want a yards per hour run. He had 2.46 yards per hour last year as a second round player. He's a, you know, a very high draft pick. Got elite speed. There's, I think, a lot of reasons to be excited about him, you know. And then also now we're not sure what's going on with this Tyreek Hill situation. So there's like that's just like another reason for me to be like, God, if I'm underweight this explosive second year player or third year player now, and he has a big season, that's really going to hurt. If he has a big season, and he's like the clear top option on the Dolphins for 6 of those games or whatever. Probably not that high of a chance, but it's another reason that I really don't want to be underweight him.
Well, there's also outs with him too. So like, let's say maybe Jalen Waddle, if there was a way for us to like truly distill skill level, which is like kind of what this exercise is attempting to get at. Obviously, you know, true skill level is sort of unknowable, but let's say it was knowable, right? And let's say Waddle's true skill level is, maybe we think he's an A minus right now, but let's say in reality, he's just a B or maybe even a B minus. For fantasy specifically, I'm not even sure how much that matters because their other options in terms of distributing the ball are Chosen Anderson,
yeah.
Durham Smythe, yeah. Eric Umekuzama, you know, just like Braxton Berrios, like anonymous players who are not going to earn targets. Like, so I'm with you. I mean, obviously the other nice thing about taking Waddle is that like, you kind of know what you're doing with your team. You're like, okay, it's like, okay, all right. I am taking Tua in round 9. I'm taking Bateman or Flowers in round 8. Like you have, like, it's just,
he
it's
lines up really well numbers. With Lamar. If you want to try to do a Lamar thing.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly.
He builds really nice teams for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Matt, we're referring to week 17 correlation. I don't know if you're as sick in the weeds as we are with the best.
Why are you talking about Lamar?
I'm familiar.
Harmon took a vacation and like saw his family. So like you know, I mean, I think maybe he's not thinking about Nelson Agholor leading the Baltimore Ravens this season. Now that correlates with Jalen Waddle.
I'm not thinking about it, but I understand why you guys are talking about it. If that makes it clear. Yeah, no, the whole time Pat, you were talking, I was like, yeah, who's their third receiver, right? Like, that offense was great last year, and that, like, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to throw the ball to our good players, and we have 3 really, really, really good players. And there is a scenario, you know, if this Tyreek thing goes south, like, they could have 1 excellent player, maybe not an elite player, but like an excellent player in Jalen Waddle. And then, yeah, like, Chosen, the artist formerly known as Robbie, you know, with a Y and IE at one point, you know, like right. We're not, you know, looking at a very good
so there. Weirdly enough, on Underdog, he's Chosen Anderson. On DraftKings, he's Robbie Chosen. So I don't.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
That screwed up my DraftKings rankings for that. We like added him to the DraftKings rankings and they broke. So he's Robbie Chosen.
He's the guy that I'm like merging data sets from like Matt's data, from like all these different sources. And he has a different, he's like Robbie Anderson with a Y in some data, like Robbie Anderson with an I. He's like different name on every source. I'm like, please guys, let's pick a name for this guy.
I was about to say, he's like a data scraping nightmare. There was when I merged like my old reception perception data when I was, you know, with the fantasy footballers and doing their draft kit stuff, and then like merging it with the site, there was, for whatever reason, in that old data set, DK Metcalf was like D.K. Metcalf, and then I had just written him in as DK Metcalf, because I think that's how it's pretty like 95% sure that's how it was supposed to be. And I got like one insane email or like comment or something about how like, how can I even trust you with like reliable data if you don't even know like what the guy, you know? Oh geez, yeah. So I feel you on the Robbie Chosen Anderson thing.
Yeah. Final thing on Waddle, I think, or final two things I'll say. I think the risk with Waddle, I think, is not like the skill level risk. I think you guys have outlined that well. I think the risk is just Miami's systemic risk. Like you look at the second half splits with Miami and they really did fall off a cliff. That could have been Tua injury related. That could have been, you know, defenses playing these guys differently related. I don't know, but I think there is some systemic risk with Miami.
There's something to that.
Like yeah.
They started defending the middle of the field a lot more. There was a lot of film takes on that I saw.
Exactly. And the second thing I'll say, we talked about Chosen Anderson, all these guys. Braxton Berrios did get $3.5 million guaranteed. So I think he's going to be the third guy here.
Don't I know it? He's an extremely good round 20 pick.
Yeah. But anyways, let's move to Devonta Smith. We've alluded to Chris Olave, I think, kind of outlined the case here. He shows up really well here. But let's move on to Smith. He's a guy, shows up here with 6% success rate over expected, which, you know, among this grouping in the back half of the second round is really strong. Matt, curious, we talked about a little bit with Smith versus AJ Brown, but I think the sort of hot debate in the fantasy community now is like, can Devonta Smith like even surpass AJ Brown, or at least like equal his production from a fantasy standpoint? Do you think, like, would you put
them
on the same?
Yeah. Can we frame this too? Is Devonta Smith versus T Higgins a little bit? Because they're going right next to each other in ADP. And I think in some ways it's a similar, you know, kind of overall situation in terms of, you know, 1A, 1B type wide receiver stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is a really good way to frame it, because like, if you just asked me the question, like who's the best, you know, number two, 1B receiver, like in this bucket right here of Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith and T Higgins, I think Smith is the best player of the three, like from just a pure individual standpoint. Is he better than AJ Brown, or is that like possible? I mean, AJ Brown's just so good. Like we're talking about a guy who's been he's been in the top three or top five in success rate versus man and press coverage for three straight years now. Like among the very best receivers in the league at beating man and press coverage. And he had his highest success rate versus zone coverage last season of his entire career. And like, yeah, he's just been one of the best receivers in the NFL for basically since he got into the league. So it's tough to say whether Smith could be better than AJ Brown, but I think if you're just looking at it versus T Higgins or versus Jalen Waddle from a pure individual player perspective, I think he's the best of those three guys. And what he does really well is route running. It is nuance, and he does it from a vertical perspective, which is why he pops up here in the success rate over expected, because he's running, you know, 20.4% of his routes are nine routes. He's running above average rate of corner routes. He's within the NFL average in terms of post routes. He's not running a lot of slants and flats and stuff like that. He is definitely winning big boy downfield NFL routes. He's running against press coverage, 87th percentile success rate versus press coverage in his second season. Just a really good player. Now, again, I think he's better from an individual standpoint than these other guys. And that's no disrespect to them. They're really good players too. I just happen to think he's a little bit better.
That's interesting.
Do you see like the – because one, like when we're taking a guy like Smith, there's that upside of Kenny maybe force a little bit more of a, you know, can he become the 1A over AJ Brown? Even if he doesn't, like, can he just kind of keep that? Like, I mean, he did lead the team in targets, I believe. So can he kind of maintain that? But then there's also the important thing of, is this guy just so good in combination with the other wide receiver who's so good? Can they just kind of gather all the targets? And so, like, if you look at Smith versus Higgins, Do you see a big difference there in terms of like how their talent will kind of protect their situation and create upside for them? Or are they, you know, both good enough to where it's kind of the way people generally perceive it?
I think that, yeah, there's probably a chance that he could be better than AJ Brown, but it's probably like a 5% chance, like just better as a pure individual. But like, by the way, we're talking about 5% that he's better than one of the guys I just said has been one of the best receivers in the NFL, like a top five receiver since he basically got into the league. Right. So it might be a small percentage chance, but the fact that the chance exists is just something. Yeah. It's a high bar to clear. But the important thing is kind of what you're saying too, about, we just had this conversation about the Dolphins, like, who's the Eagles' third receiver? Obviously they have Dallas Goedert, you know, which is a pretty big difference than what the Dolphins are doing. But after that, like, I love these, you know, Quez, concentrated baby offenses. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Quez Watkins, he's there. He's a guy. But I mean, you know, if you're going out there, you're throwing the ball to AJ Brown, you're throwing it to Devonta Smith, you're throwing it to Dallas Goedert for the most part. So yeah, I think it's going to be a concentrated offense. I think he's going to be a huge part of it. Again, I'm only saying he has such a small percent chance to be better than AJ Brown from a player perspective, just because that's how high I view AJ Brown.
And he's probably never going to be better than AJ Brown at like yards after the, like, there's some stuff that's not captured in the success rate stuff, like the yak ability. I think Devonta's actually a little underrated for his yak. Like, he's not Tyler Lockett falling down after every catch, but he's not going to be AJ Brown just stiff arming dudes into the turf and taking it to the house, right?
Let me ask this. Who do you think of these three guys, Waddle, Higgins, Smith, who do you think has the most contingent value? If the other guy were to miss, if all three of the top options in their offenses miss the entire season, we get an entire season out of all three of these guys, who do you think has the most upside?
It's a great question, because I think all of these guys are capable of being number one receivers. Like, I think T. Higgins could be a number one on a team. I think Jalen Waddle could be a number one on a team. I think Devonta Smith could definitely be a number one on a team. I think that's where I think it's hard, because I think the best situation for all of these guys is probably like if there's no Ja'Marr Chase and like T. Higgins steps into that role. But I don't know, man, that's a hard one. I think it's I'll take the guy who I just think is the best player though. And I think that is Devonta Smith. So I'll just double back on that answer.
Okay. I agree with like Matt on all three prongs. I think he would have the best season. I think he's the best player. And I think he would have the most to gain, because I also think his coaching staff is the best and would figure out how to optimize losing a guy like AJ Brown. Like, I think, like, Olave, I mean, also one, like, for Olave, and speaking about these guys, like, Michael Thomas is going to be done playing after like six quarters. So, like, I'm like basically counting Olave, like, that is just going to happen for him anyway.
Waddle's the other guy. No.
Oh, I was thinking, it's just in my mind, Devonta and Olave are forever mingled.
The same person, yeah.
Well,
I feel like Waddle would actually probably be worse without Tyreek.
That's what I was gonna make the argument for. Like, the offense looks so broken,
so
in
bad
2021 without Tyreek, and like, who is playing on? Is it Chosen Anderson on the outside? Like, man, I think that gets tough for Waddle if Tyreek's not there. Obviously, the volume ceiling could be crazy, right? But like, is that offense functional?
It's Chosen, Berríos, Durham Smythe.
Yeah, I think, like, whereas Philadelphia, I think the offense can still be functional without A.J. Brown, just because Jalen Hurts is so damn good. You know, they got talented running backs. They got Dallas Goedert. I think, obviously, it's worse without A.J. Brown, but it doesn't get to, like, just unusable. I do worry a little bit about Miami without Tyreek. Like, is that even a functional offense?
Yeah, I get that.
We're getting definitely into the weeds a lot with, like, the Dolphins part of it, but you know, you mentioned, I think one of you guys said that there were like film takes about like when they, you know, closed up the middle of the field, they're not offering that to Tua and how he struggled with that a little bit. A lot of that too is like they're playing physical press coverage on these receivers on the outside. And because a lot of teams early in the year were just scared to get like, all right, you press Tyreek, you press Jalen Waddle, but you're going to get ripped over the top a couple of times per game. And that is true. But, you know, the rest of the snaps can be problematic for the quarterback. I mean, these guys can beat press coverage, but the guy who struggles with it more is Jalen Waddle. So, you know, that's and it struggle in like a relative term, right? He has like a 69% success rate versus man. He's weaker against press coverage than some of these other guys we're talking about. So it's not like a true weakness in his game, but when you're picking nits among top receivers here, it's something to point out.
Got it. Let's I'll give the floor Davis, Pat. Any final questions about any of these other round one or two wide receivers while we have Matt that you want to pick his brain on? Or Pat, did you have something to say in response?
No,
to
I don't. I have a question about a guy on the next slide, I think. So
okay.
Davis, have any questions? Go ahead.
No, I'm good. Okay. I think this data to me is like way more interesting with guys worth arguing about. Like no one's going to stake their reputation on Jalen Waddle being bad, but someone might be, someone that we know might even be like, oh, DK Metcalf's a little overrated.
Well, that's who I want to talk about.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Dive into Metcalf then Pat.
Well, I mean, I guess so it did. Okay. So Tyler Lockett made this. He's been great. I think he was one or two in ESPN's open score last year as well. Yeah, he was second behind Deontay Johnson there. So the dude has not fallen off. And DK Metcalf, obviously very good as well. But this is kind of, as we talk about the concentrated offense question, like I think sometimes people get a little bit too concerned about who the one, you know, the one versus the two. It's like if you're an explosive offense and it's a concentrated offense, you know, it doesn't always matter that much who the top wide receiver is, who the secondary wide receiver is. Partly, I think, because wide receiver talent is such an important part of this whole question. Like the reason, there's a reason why the Dolphins offensive is so concentrated. I mean, Mike McDaniel literally built a system around getting two guys the ball because those are the two best guys by miles, you know, that he can get the ball, the guys he can get the ball into their hands. So concentrated offenses with two wide receivers, great, maybe even better than just one really good guy. But when you get to three, then it can get a little bit more tricky. And now we have this with the Seahawks, where you've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who looks like he has a pretty high ceiling as a target earner. And I think the specific way that he wins could be a real problem for the other guys in the offense, because he could be more of just, you know, a target dominator and just getting a lot of volume, sucking volume out of the offense for the other guys. So how protected do you think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are from Jaxon Smith-Njigba hitting the ground running?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been a Tyler Lockett guy for, Davis knows this, you know, I've been a Tyler Lockett guy for a long time. You know, we've had a lot of discussions over the year. That's like back in the NFL podcast days, Davis, about like Tyler Lockett when I was too high on him too early, right? I love Tyler Lockett. I think he's a great player. I think I can easily make a case that DK Metcalf has been an awesome player the last 3 years. I can just as easily make a case that Tyler Lockett's been the best receiver on that team the last 3 years, even though like Metcalf checks the prototypical size speed barometers we usually like to see. I think it's really tough. Like I don't think that the my problem with these two receivers is that I think there's like, other than age, which I guess is certainly a variable. There's no doubt about that. But like you said, Pat, I don't think there's any evidence that Lockett has fallen off to this point. I don't understand, like, if we're talking about who's protected of the two, why Lockett would be less protected or less insulated from Jaxon Smith-Njigba than Metcalf would be. I think it's like kind of a coin flip. I guess the one thing you could say too is that like Metcalf has been a true X receiver, and, you know, this like one of these guys, and like that's probably not Jaxon Smith-Njigba's role. But to me, I just think they're going to come out there and they're going to play in 11 personnel a ton. I don't care what Pete Carroll says about two tight ends. Like the way NFL coaches are, he's not going to come out there and be like, okay, well, we're playing 11 personnel now because
when the rubber meets the road,
get Will Disley out there.
He's not playing Will Disley over Smith and Jigba. Like if Smith and Jigba 100%. Shows up and he is who they think he is, it's 11 personnel from the jump. And I know Corain doesn't agree with this, but my thought has always been Metcalf is the one who is completely insulated. He just is going to do what he's always done. He's going to score 10 touchdowns. Maybe he never achieves the peak of what he could with his physical gifts because he's always playing with another great wide receiver. And maybe Metcalf is a B-plus wide receiver and not an A-minus wide receiver. So he'll never be Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or whoever. But nothing Smith-Njigba or Tyler Lockett could do would change the base role that he has. Like I do not foresee an offense where DK Metcalf ends the season with 85 targets because Lockett and Metcalf were just that much, or Lockett and Smith-Njigba were that much better than him. And maybe I'll eat it, but I feel pretty good about that.
Is that like when we talk about like blocking mattering, like that's what I'm thinking. Like we get to week 14 or get to the end of the year in two wide receiver sets. We're in there when they're at the goal line. There's no way they're taking DK Metcalf off the field.
Yeah, no chance.
Right. Like he's locked. So that's where I kind of agree with you, Davis, in that like, in terms of like physically being on the field in two wide receiver sets, I feel like he's pretty safe. Whereas I can see the argument for Lockett being pushed out by the end of the year.
I can see that happening. I don't think it's likely,
but it's possible.
Lockett's also at that stage where what we talked about 3 weeks ago, like where when you look at things at an aging curve, it looks nice and gentle, but it's not nice and gentle when it happens to a single guy. And that's far more likely to happen. So obviously Metcalf is still on the ascendancy of that. Like if you told me this was Lockett's, like, you know, Larry Fitzgerald season where he was 100 receptions, 1,000 yards, and then had 600 receptions, and we never thought about him again. That could be. I mean, Tyler Lockett's also very susceptible to, like, if he did get hurt. I mean, you know, at 31 years old, like, his recovery is going to be harder. His role could change, and he could get Wally pipped pretty easy. I don't think there's no debate about who DK Metcalf is, right? Like it's just, honestly, his fantasy season will be decided by if he scores 8 touchdowns, it's going to be a bad season. If he scores 14, it's going to be a really good one. And that feels like that's just it.
But Matt, can I get a little more of your thoughts on just how good Metcalf is? Like, do you agree that he's kind of like a B+ wide receiver?
Yeah, probably. Just because I think he's, you know, you look at his success rates from last year, which wasn't one of his best years, but was still a really quality season. Like we're talking 80th percentile against man, 77th percentile against press, and 32nd against zone, which is pretty typical of these like non-elite X receivers that we've talked about. You know, Mike Evans, I think it fits into that group. Evans is great. Like he might be like a Hall of Fame player, but I mean, I don't know. That's actually an interesting debate if he's like a Hall of Fame player, because I don't think he's ever necessarily been like a top 5 player at the position.
He's got to be if he keeps just hitting,
because he's such a compiler. Yeah, right.
Do it
yeah.
2 more years and he's in.
Yeah,
a thousand yards at his age with Baker Mayfield,
Kyle he should Kraft, get in for that.
Yeah, he should and get Carson in for that Wentz. Alone.
No doubt about it. Yeah, finest accomplishment.
But I think that's kind of where I'd view him if I'm like ranking NFL receivers. I think he's like a B. I think both him and Tyler Lockett are probably A to B plus type receivers, as opposed to like A+ type receivers. Just and I think that's saying a lot. I think they're really, really good players. But yeah, that's probably where I'd view them.
Yeah, my thing with Metcalf is like, I guess it just feels expensive. Like I have to pay like early to mid, maybe the late sometimes third round price for him. And you know, it's like if it's not a concentrated offense, I mean, like how much better is DK Metcalf than Brandon Ayuk?
Dude, you're asking the wrong person that question. But
am I? Because I'm not drafting a lot of Mecca.
But I mean, I think that's a bit of like you gotta read the board. Like Metcalf to me is unquestionably better than Ridley. He's not unquestionably better to me than Debo. But I think you can play that. You can just middle those guys when they're on the board. Unquestionably better than Cooper's situation, because one, they're going to be spending the entire back half of the season playing in a polar vortex and like the worst the way that stadium is constructed makes the wind swirl around. It's why Cleveland plays a bunch of games every year with the this is true. They play a bunch of games with totals in like 32, like more than any other team. They have these super low totals. No one here is disrespecting Keenan Allen. He's a bad fit for the scoring system and 0.5 PPR, no bonuses. Christian Watson, sure, whatever. Maybe he's this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Maybe he's this year's, you know, Mecole Hardman, right?
Yeah.
Judy, obvious question marks. London, obvious volume question marks. Weirdly enough, no question marks for me really about McLaurin. Hopkins, all these guys after him have such giant question marks. And really your only question mark about Metcalf, I just, Corinne, because I don't even think, like, do you really see him seeing less than 100 targets, even if Smith and Jigba is that good?
It's just that I don't want to – I'm with Sam on the – you know, Sam and I have a very, very strong disagreement, but it's, like, essentially boiled down to, like, if we're on the clock in the second round, do we want to take Chris Olave or Tony Pollard? And I actually am not sure at this point what else we disagree on with this 2-3 turn situation, because, like, I just don't – why should I have to rip open this wide receiver tier when I can take a running back who normally costs me a second round pick? So that's where I'm just like, I'll take Josh Jacobs. I'll take Ramondre Stevenson. I'll take Derrick Henry. I'll take Breece Hall.
That's what I do too. But I find I still get,
I'll take Mark Andrews.
I find I still get more than enough Metcalf playing it that way. Honestly.
So that's where I'm at. I want to move on to other guys, but I'm in the same boat where if those running backs are all gone, I'm kind of with you, Davis, that I like Metcalf better than the other wide receivers in this tier. But
I do too, to be clear.
Yeah, it just so often happens to me that, like I have Breece staring at me, or even Mark Andrews, and I can set up the Lamar Mark Andrews stack that might be staring at me. Like, it's just hard for me to click Metcalf just because of where he's placed on the boards. But let's move on to Calvin Ridley. I think he's a super interesting player to evaluate through the reception lens, because A, we haven't seen him in a year and a half, and B, he's switching teams. So figuring out who he is as an isolated player is actually particularly important in this instance. So this data, obviously there's no data from 2022 on Ridley. He didn't play. This data is from his 2020 and 2021 sample. And Matt, your data shows really good things for Calvin Ridley. Some reasons why he's popping in this success rate over expected. He faced a high rate of double coverage and actually did pretty well against it. High success rate on challenging routes down the field, the corner, the nine, the post. And just overall very diverse route tree, sort of low percentage of the Mickey Mouse gimmicky routes. So that bumps him up as well. Really curious, like the Ridley stuff is so tricky this year. Really, really curious, like how you're valuing him with all this unknowns in 2023.
Yeah. I thought it just on the, like him and Metcalf too, to me are like everybody that comes after, with the exception of Keenan Allen, just cause he's a tough player, like Davis said, to read in the scoring format, and also just like from an age curve perspective. But like these two guys are, I think, properly valued over Samuel and Cooper and Watson and Judy, just because they're all, these two are so, like, much better players than any of those guys. And that includes like Ridley versus Metcalf is interesting, just because I think they're both kind of, the last time we saw Calvin Ridley, he was in that like A-, A level tier to me as an individual player. Great route runner, especially downfield, like you mentioned. And he's a guy that was doing it a lot as a true X receiver in 2020 and 2021, despite being a smaller player. He's just, again, such a good technician, so explosive. He's so hard to read, just because is he going to look like, even in 21, when his efficiency sort of went down a little bit, like from a yards per target standpoint, you know, he's playing with what was Matt Ryan. And like, we know what Matt Ryan ended up being the year after that. Like, I think it's reasonable to conclude like he wasn't a great, great quarterback as an individual perspective in 21. And there were just some small mistakes from Ridley and like contested situations and some, you know, some bad drops and stuff that in like a 5-game sample is going to mess with you a little bit. But he's a tough player to read, because again, last time we saw him, I think he was like an A-, A-level receiver. It's just like, what is he going to be after a year and a half off? But I think from a player isolating standpoint, he's very good.
And how sticky do you think these skills are? Like, you know, just in general, because I think Ridley's such an interesting example of, you know, he got suspended for something. He's missed time, not because of injury, right? He's hopefully, you know, he's going to be very similar to the guy that we saw. But at the same time, he's not young anymore.
He's sneaky old.
Yeah. He came in really old, right? So
he was like 33 when he graduated Alabama.
Yeah. He turns 29 in December. So he is, he's truly sneaky old. Yeah.
He's closer in age to Cooper Kupp than DK Metcalf, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. It just is sort of like the kind of the base rate, or like, you know, pull back and kind of look at the macro view here. Like, how risky is it to look at a guy's, you know, 2020 success rate and be like, well, he was awesome then, now it's entering 2023. How much weight would you generally, you know, suggest putting on that evaluation?
I think it's really risky. And like that risk is no, and it's a kind of an unknowable question. I think like, I have no idea, because we've never seen really a player take this type of gap. Like Josh Gordon's big season was prior to reception perception. So like, I don't actually have, you know, Josh Gordon's numbers from like 2012 and 2013 and stuff like that. He'd be the only one that Would be a good example.
For fun, but you should chart his breakout season. That seems like a good use of time.
When, because I definitely have so much of that on my hands. You do not know how many like randos get suggested in my Discord like on a daily basis.
I suggested some randos.
Brandon Lloyd, Brandon Lloyd.
Brandon Lloyd actually came up in a discussion at one point when I thought there was like some risk that this 2020 season was going to get canceled for COVID. That was one of my ideas, was like, I'll definitely try to pay the bills on like, hey, come subscribe to this website, you know, with historical data from like Josh Gordon and like Randy Moss's big season or something like that.
But it would have worked on me.
Yeah. Randy, I mean, yeah, there's,
I'm already subscribed, but I would have maintained my subscription.
One of these days. I would love to do that. But no, but seriously, like there was a time too when like Gordon came back. I think it was in 2017. That season is in the RP database, and it was really good. And he's a guy that, from a skill standpoint, is definitely different than Ridley, because I think like Ridley's more of he kind of has like old man game already, and that he's a great route runner, and he's not like he's an explosive player, but I wouldn't say that he's on like the Olave level of explosive route running, but they're kind of in the same bucket. So I think it's game that should age well. It's just the, you know, year and a half layoff that's tough. And I think the risk really isn't baked into his ADP at all.
I'm totally with you. They're just treating him like Calvin Ridley is back and is a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So, and like, how likely is that to be the case? Cause I think if we're 3 weeks into the season and he's just Calvin Ridley,
It would be way weirder if he came back and was just Calvin Ridley, like the same guy that we just saw, than if he came back and like got tackled once and was like, holy shit, I've been tackled in 2 years. That was wild. I don't know how about this anymore. Like, it would be way weirder in my opinion.
I kind of think I'd be not surprised at all, because I'm like, yeah, good players are just good, but like good players taking a year and a half off is tough to measure. So yeah. I don't know. I guess I won't be surprised either way, really, which is a stupid thing to say.
Do you have any thoughts on like the, you know, you mentioned kind of the old man game and, you know, some parts of wide receivers games maybe aging a little bit better? Like that is such an interesting idea to me, because I think we kind of get like, I'll hear stuff like, oh, big wide receivers don't age well. And it's like generally because a couple of big wide receivers have fallen off, or like, you know, Calvin Johnson retired really early or some stuff. But, you know, some guys seem to be aging very well as big wide receivers. And then, like, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster has aged, he's not even like old yet, and he's already super old, you know? So it's like, it doesn't seem quite as intuitive as that, is like, oh, it's tough to be a big wide receiver as you age. But I do imagine, like, you know, we've all kind of played basketball with like the old guy at the park who doesn't, you know, knows everywhere to be. He's got the nice old man game. I kind of think there's something to that, right? Like certain skills are going to age. So it might be more around skills rather than kind of physical archetype. But what are your thoughts on kind of how wide receiver games age?
I think the fact that we're so kind of variable in where these guys line up, it helps a lot with these aging curves. Because like you talk, especially the big receivers, you know, we talked about Larry Fitzgerald got mentioned in the Tyler Lockett discussion. He's a great example of a guy that went from being a big perimeter to receiver beat to being like that big slot receiver in like a power slot Cooper Kupp type of role that we think about now. He was kind of one of the first guys playing that position, and that helped offset some of the, you know, that like the explosiveness might have gone down, like running a different type of route tree. You know, the Allen Robinson thing we talked about, like I can totally see him being an absolutely poor fit as the Rams X receiver at this point of his career, but maybe being a decent fit, decent to good fit as a big slot receiver for the Steelers this year.
Is like, that I think what he was awesome. For them? Was he kind of a classic?
True, they sold us a lot of that bullshit about like, we can't wait to mix up his route tree and use him at a lot of different positions. And then like up until he got hurt, basically he's stuck to the line of scrimmage and not moving around and running like a true, like a very, very, very vanilla route tree. So, and you know, there's a lot of excuses for why that might've been whatever. So yeah, I think that, but he's a guy that might recover a little bit better in a different type of role. But I think another thing I said earlier was like people taking the charts of guys and just putting it on Twitter and like, oh, you know, this is a thing that I think people do that with a guy like DeAndre Hopkins right now. And Hopkins was very good last year in reception perception, but there's a clear drop off from what like his elite seasons in like 2019 and 2020. So I'm willing to say that, like, I have no idea then what 2023 is going to look like, right? Like, if it's another season that looks like 2022 where he's not at his best, but he's still pretty good, I guess that wouldn't be surprising. But like, you look at a guy like Dez Bryant, 2016, 71.1% success rate versus man coverage. And then 2017, 52.1%, like a massive drop off, basically, where it looked like he's aging gracefully. But then his last season in Dallas was kind of a disaster. He gets cut. Nobody picks him up until like November. He gets hurt. And then like he's playing for the Ravens, you know, at some point in like a bit role. So honestly, it's one of the hardest things, I think, to predict using reception perception data is like aging curves and when these guys might fall off.
Yeah. The aging stuff is, yeah, is super interesting. And sort of along those lines, I want to move on to Treylon Burks here. I guess on the other side of aging, there's the year two, year three breakout aspect of fantasy, right, that everyone talks about. And I'm really curious with a guy like Burks showing up here with a below 4% success rate over expected. It's kind of by far the worst on this chart. But at the same time, he's a young player. He was asked to do something completely different in year one in Tennessee than he did his entire collegiate career. He's basically a slot player in college, played off the line a bunch, and the Titans asked him to be a true X wide receiver on the outside. So you got to give some credit to him for learning something completely new. I guess the question for you, Matt, is like, how often do we see big jumps, you know, from year one to year two with a player like Burks who doesn't show up super well in your data in year one? Like, do you think like pricing him in this low end wide receiver three range is fair, or do you think that's still overvalued?
I think it's fair despite the questions that I like, the clear questions I have about his game. Like you mentioned, there were he was playing a totally different position basically in the NFL than he was in college. And just to put some numbers behind that, you know, in it, like as a year one player, he lined up almost 75% of his sample snaps were on the line of scrimmage and was outside for 83.5%. His final year at Arkansas in reception perception, he took 80.5% of his snaps in the slot or backfield and was 84% of snaps off the line. So like basically a complete flip of those two numbers there. And that's a really hard transition to make for a guy in his rookie season, especially somebody who like dealt with offseason issues, you know, the conditioning stuff. He didn't like hit the ground running right away. You know, he then gets banged up in season. I think he's a tough player to read because of that. There are things he's really good at, like his slant route success rate's awesome. His dig route success rate's pretty good too. Like he runs those big in-breaking crossers against play action. He's great at that stuff. I don't think he offers nearly the same juice after the catch that people thought he did, just because he kind of had that like goofy Mickey Mouse role in college. But I think there's a chance he's like, I think the ceiling on him is lower than people think, but I think he's got a chance to be a decent player. And then, I think the fact that he hasn't gotten too steamed up is probably fair, because I think there are real risks with him as a player. And to the question about like guys who have made the jump, there are a couple of, like DJ Moore was really raw as a route runner, had a bad season, took a good season, second season jump. You know, I can think of like Kenny Golladay is another one who took a big jump in his second season, then third season obviously didn't go so well. And then Cortland Sutton's like another one. There are a lot of guys who just are what they are. Sometimes you'll see a guy who's really like raw as a route runner take that step in year two and year three. I think Burks could be that guy because he shows some signals on like I said, those in-breaking routes. But he might be a guy who gets kind of pigeonholed and stuck in that role, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense. Pat, I know you're bullish on Burks. Curious your thoughts on all that.
No, I mean, I'm bullish on Burks, so I just heard to me, you were gushing about Burks, so I'm going to keep drafting him.
All I heard was he was asked to do something really hard, and he didn't completely flail and shit himself. Yeah. So goodbye, me.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. No, that's
true.
100% a 100% reasonable take off of his rookie season. I think that's just. Then again, if you look at it, it's like, well, he's still a limited player, incomplete player, and he always is that guy. I think that won't be surprising, but I think there's definitely a chance that he takes that jump that we're talking about, just because he didn't completely shit himself at doing something very hard and very different from what he was doing as a collegiate player.
I'm also encouraged that he does, you know, have some clear strengths as a wide receiver, and it's like, yep, if he can be good enough just to be out there all the time, have them design the offense where he's seeing a lot of first reads, getting a lot of kind of, you know, maybe he does get some
design stuff from time to time, and he's just out there enough. The weaknesses don't even need to be like, they just need to be not bad enough to where he, you know, is turning them off. Right.
Yeah. One thing I'm concerned about though is that the offense might just be a disaster.
Oh yeah.
Right. I think that is a risk. He's a risk a little bit as an individual player, which is why I think like, I'm not freaking out at where he, you know, like wide receiver 35. I'm not freaking out to take him. I'm not freaking out to fade him, I guess, at that price, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think he moves up because apparently Levis is behind Malik Willis right now. I think the drumbeat's going to be Tannehill this summer. And then,
I mean, every day that Tannehill remains on the roster, it's more likely they're at least competent.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. If that concern disappears and they don't sign Hopkins, I think Burks is going to move up.
So the Hopkins thing is what I was going to bring up. Apparently, in the reporting, the Titans are sort of the favorite right now. They've been more aggressive than New England, is what I've read. So, I think that's like an ADP risk, but not like I actually kind of hope for Burks that Hopkins is there and the offense is better.
Right? Yeah, Matt, what are your thoughts on how would these? Yeah. How would those two mesh together? Like, would Burks stop playing X, or is Hopkins still an X?
I think Hopkins would, like, last we saw him was still as much in that offense as Davis mentioned earlier. Like, there is a true X receiver. He's still profiles as that should be his best role, is like as an X receiver. But like I talked about, when these guys get older, sometimes it helps to move them out of that position, and then that could keep Burks in the X receiver position. I don't feel the same way as like when Julio Jones got to Tennessee, and even though that move didn't work out, like, in hindsight, we know that, but I was like, okay, I'm still taking AJ Brown because I really believe bullishly in like AJ Brown's talent that way. I don't really feel that way with Treylon Burks. But I think there, these guys can complement each other, and it could even be from like an alignment standpoint. If they're going to have Hopkins go out there and just be the true X, like, it could be good for Burks to be an off ball player as opposed to a strictly on the line guy like he was in year one. And I mean, to that point too, like, I mean, shoot, who else was playing X receiver for the Titans last year, and who is going to play X receiver other than Treylon Burks this year if they don't sign DeAndre Hopkins?
Like,
it's not going to be Kyle Phillips. It's not going to be Nick Westbrook-Ikhina or whatever. I mean,
the depth was bad last year, and it got like even like at least they had Woods and Austin Hooper. Like, those guys are not stud NFL players, but they're confident. They lost both of those guys. Now it's like, man, Chris Moore starting at X?
Racy McMath.
Yeah.
I
want to ask you about Jerry Jeudy on this chart, because that, to me, I've had a tough time with his ADP, but it's, you know, I know Sean Siegel really likes him. Pete Overzet likes him. There's kind of been this drumbeat around him. It's like, you know, he's shown he can do a couple different things. But one of the things you always hear about Jerry Jeudy is he's a great route runner. So to see him here with a -1% success rate over expected jumps out to me as a red flag, because it's like, this is supposed to be what this guy does well. So where are you at on him? And it's kind of a crowded, or sort of maybe not crowded, but uncertain situation in Denver with, you know, the amount of wide receivers they have.
Yeah, one of my strongest takes last year was that I thought this offense, I didn't think it was going to be as bad as it ended up being, but I thought this entire skill position room was super overrated. The Broncos, like, receiver room, I was not in on any of those dudes last year, you know, especially where they got steamed up to being. And I had my concerns about Russ going from Seattle to Denver. And again, those were worse than I thought they could have been. So I've never been the biggest like Jeudy or Sutton fan as individual players. I think they've got at best a bunch of like wide receiver twos there. And you mentioned the route running stuff with Jerry Jeudy. He's still living a lot on his like collegiate reputation as a route runner. And like, the practice videos that even last week, like,
there was literally one going around last week. Like, are we ready to talk about how Jeudy is going to finish as a wide receiver one this year? Yeah. And it was just him beating a traffic cone. Like,
I might have been
like 10 land sharks deep on the beach, but I did manage to see that one
video.
That's a great example of like why you see stuff like that, and your brain fills in the information. Like, great collegiate route runner, he's still beating, you know, XFL players on a field, you know, in Alabama somewhere, whatever. Yeah. And, you know, he's still a great router. I don't think he has been as a pro. And like, there's a reason he's been a volatile up and down player from a production standpoint, because he's a volatile up and down player. Like, he's not bad. He's got a 70.6% success rate versus man coverage. That's a 63rd percentile score. That's not bad, but 49th against press, fifth percentile against zone coverage. Some of that can be poor offensive design, but a lot of that is because he's not a consistent player. Like, he's very sort of like, he's actually pretty similar to Amari Cooper, who is another like up and down producer because he's an up and down player. And I think he had a great season last year, but he's had some lesser seasons throughout the course of his career. And I think some of those concerns have stuck with Judy as well. So I'm with you that, like, maybe I look like, I don't think, again, you're not going to sit here and like find anywhere where I'm saying Jerry Judy is bad, but I there's no way, like, wide receiver 21, there are other guys going after. I'm 100% taking over Judy.
So are you are you in on Dulcich? Do you think Dulcich is a good route runner?
I mean, dude, I don't do tight ends.
On Dulcich.
I literally have no opinion on if Greg Dulcich is a good NFL tight end or whatever. It's just like the role seems appealing, but I also thought the same thing about Alberto, and I learned my lesson.
We got Marvin Mims here. We've got Tim Patrick here. Like, thoughts on like how protected are Sutton and Judy from those guys?
Like, I don't think they're protected at all. And that's kind of my thing, is I think it's weird that we look at this receiver core that, like you said, probably goes four deep. And I don't think any of these guys are true number ones. I guess that's where you really have to have a stance that Judy is not just a good player, but like a true legit number one receiver. And like, we're talking about, like, he's the same quarterback too. You know, I think Russ is going to have a better season this year than he did last year. Like, I think Sean Payton is an offensive elevator. And I mean, certainly the coaching change from Nate Hackett to Sean Payton is dramatic, but I think Marvin Mims was a really good prospect and like could be a guy that hits the ground running as a speed slot receiver. A lot of the speed slot receiver stuff is what Jerry Judy's been best at too. I think Courtland Sutton was overrated last year, but I almost think like he's getting too discounted this year. Like, he's a fine, you know, average, maybe slightly below average starting X receiver, but he's probably the only X receiver on the roster. So I think Sutton, it's
because he's not on the site yet. Is he? If you did him,
nah, he's not a guy I've done from this past year, but his prior seasons are on the site. And there's a few I have like from the in-season charting data that I did. So like 3-4 games, I think, are in the in-season tracker. And yeah, they weren't very good, but neither was his 2021 season.
In open score, Jerry Judy's 11th and Sutton's 12th. So they were like dead even in that metric last year. So
yeah,
strange. I don't know. I've been wondering if like the Sutton is dead now narrative has like kind of jumped the shark a little bit.
I think it's jumped the shark almost just like he was a true number one elite player, mm-hmm. ready to break out mm-hmm. with a good quarterback and jumped the shark last year. I think that there's a truth there is probably somewhere in the middle, which is that I don't think like it's actually funny. I posted this. I did the thing I said I didn't like, where I just posted the chart with and like made a joke about it type of thing on Twitter, where like there was that headline that they had Courtland Sutton looking at Michael Thomas tape from 2019 or whatever. And then you look at like the only route that that Courtland Sutton runs really well is like the slant route. So I think it is kind of interesting at least to think like if there's going to be
West.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's going to be like an X receiver just running a bunch of in breaking short routes. Like that is actually the thing that Courtland Sutton does really well. He's not really a vertical X receiver. So I think the fact that, the ADP assumes that Jerry Judy's just so much better than these guys. I don't know if that's really the truth.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Speaking of inconsistent guys, if Jerry Judy's inconsistent, I don't know what we call Kadarius Toney. He shows up here on this chart.
Sam, first of all, how dare you?
Sorry.
Kadarius Toney's very consistent. He never plays and he gets open when he does it.
True. He's been incredibly consistent.
He's consistent at playing less than 20% of the snaps. But yeah, Toney, I think, is one of the most polarizing guys in fantasy this year. I don't get it at all why he's going this high. So maybe I'm just confirming my biases here with looking at this chart. But yeah, Matt, can you talk through Toney? I guess my question for you, like more specifically, is like, I think Toney is perceived as this guy that has this unbelievable ceiling because, in my mind, because he has cool highlights and because he plays with Patrick Mahomes. But Have you seen anything in the data or your chart?
They're also talking him up a lot. Is their number one?
That's true. Yeah. But like,
are they really, or is that like extrapolating some like positive quotes? Is like they're really high on his talent, but does that really truly mean they view him as like a true number one receiver? I think when you really critically read what they've said, that's not necessarily the case.
But this is the same organization that keeps posting Justin Ross clips, so I think we can just take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah, they're clearly trying to, you know, get the clicks and stuff like that from somebody in their social media department has to be like on fantasy Twitter, has to be like on Dynasty.
No. Twitter. Someone in their social media department had to have gone to Clemson. It has to be a Clemson connection. That's the only explanation for how there's a new Justin Ross quote or video once a week for a guy who's like 19th string.
Yeah. I mean either a deep Dynasty Davis, sicko maybe. Or went to
Clemson. Maybe he's good.
Maybe
there's one chief that Davis won't draft in the history of the organization. It's Justin Ross.
I've drafted Deneric Prince more times than I've taken Justin Ross.
Oh god, Matt, I'm your stuck with Tony.
It
like,
might be a good take.
Do the data, Tony,
could you squint with Tony's profile and like see like if you were forced to make the case for him being a wide receiver one, like could you even do it? Or like I just want to know how bad is it?
Are you on Tony Davis? Are you drafting him?
Just when I take Mahomes. I probably literally through like 300 teams, like probably have no Tony without Mahomes.
So we're all gonna be pretty underweight Tony.
Well, Mahomes is my second most drafted quarterback, so I'm probably overweight, Tony.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. So two of us will be underweight, Tony. And how does he, like, Matt, just tell us, like, how he buries us. That's kind of what I want to hear.
He would have to be doing stuff that we have never seen him do. Like, he would have to be playing and excelling in a role that we have not seen him play or excel in as an NFL player, or even his final year at Florida. Like I said in his collegiate evaluation that like his NFL team was going to be starting from square one as a route runner. And I mean, I think that's more like we talk about Mickey Mouse routes. Like he's the king of Mickey Mouse routes. I couldn't care less about what he's doing on 17.1% of his routes are screens. 14.5% of his routes are flat routes. Like, and he has not shown the skills at all that he's going to be like a press man coverage beater at the NFL level at this point. I think he showed a couple of games and we're talking about a player that like barely ever plays. So I made this, I've said this at the beginning of his profile from last year that like Tony hits the mark of a full reception perception sample and that like I got 8 games on him, but that 8 games contained 127 snaps and 76 routes.
I was gonna say like 6 routes.
yeah. So like keep that in mind. This guy barely ever plays, but even in his rookie season, he had a decent success rate versus zone, but some of that is on the Mickey Mouse routes. And again, there's nothing that he's shown as an NFL player that like he can go out and like line up outside and beat press man coverage, period. Like he would have to be doing stuff that we have never seen him do, which maybe that's possible, but I really don't even think the Chiefs are banking on that. I think that's kind of like nonsense.
Can I pitch you some content for the site? I think, you know, YouTube shorts are kind of blowing up right now. TikTok obviously taking off. You should just do his Super Bowl. Just chart his Super Bowl routes as a TikTok.
Hey, five routes. His Super Bowl MVP caliber performance, totally.
I think it's inside the lab.
Yeah.
That punt return. Do you chart punt returns? Because that was a really key punt return. You might have to.
I'm closer to charting tight ends than punt returns. I will never chart a tight end. So.
Can we end the show with Matt dunking on Allen Lazard, who was the worst pick on the board last year and somehow is trying to dupe people into also being the worst pick again?
Blocking matters. 2023?
Blocking matters. That's why he's going to get on the field a ton.
Blocking matters and like listening to Aaron Rodgers sum up the Loose Change documentary at lunch every single day matters. Like I think that's how Allen Lazard ended up in New York Jets.
As we're wrapping up, if we can get your thoughts on Dobbs too in that same.
Yeah, that was going to be the one because in sort of the, I don't know. There's a Dobbs contingent and I just like don't get it. I got it when he was really cheap, but like, I don't know, the yards per route run stuff doesn't look great on him. you know, he was a day three guy. They brought in Jaden Reed in day two. Like, the charting stuff on him doesn't look great either on Matt's stuff or the open score stuff. So I guess Dobbs is a guy that I have not gotten the price rise at all. But yeah, Matt, curious either. What you thought of his rookie year.
I think he showed as a day three receiver that he could be like a functional NFL receiver, which is pretty good. Like, if you're getting a guy on day three who ends up being your long-term wide receiver three, I think that's probably the best, you know, and most ideal fit for him. But I think Christian Watson is much better. And I have my questions about Christian Watson, but I think he's much better. And I think Jaden Reed is probably a better receiver long-term. I think Dobbs showed he can play in the NFL as a first year receiver, but he's also, I don't think he showed anything that would lead you to believe he's a long-term high-end starter by any means.
Yeah, that's my
and thoughts on Lazard is kind of, because he's going to be out. I mean, you know, Roger's going to make sure he's out there.
Yeah, man. I think blocking matters, bro. That's what I'll say about Alan Lazard.
You said you don't do tight ends, but yet you've charted.
But he's like the closest guy. He has a pretty similar role to like a tight end, I think, than like of what we think about with these guys.
League in inline snaps, right?
I think he did. Plays in line. And I think that he's actually not bad in that role because he's fine on like some shorter routes and he's got good hands and he wins in contested situations and he is a good blocker. But I think he ideally is like a wide receiver three, like a third guy in the passing game. But I don't know, the fact that Corey Davis is still on that roster, I'm like, Davis is a much better receiver than Alan Lazard. So we'll see about that.
Yeah. Well, once underdog.
Any thoughts on him while we're talking about blocking dudes?
On who did we say?
Gabriel Davis.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I think that was a rough price tag on Davis last year. But I think almost like it's a little bit too far the other direction now where like him at wide receiver 41 is like is a perfectly good, like capable pick. Because I think he's shown he's on that Devontae Parker axis of X receivers that I talked about where he's actually a really good downfield route runner. And he's good in contested situations. He's just not a true number two receiver, like period. And I thought that last year, I think that now, but he's a guy that can win vertically. He can win on some, like we talk about, like give us guys that win on nine routes, give us guys that can win down the field. He's definitely that guy. Like he's not terrible. He was just like really grossly overpriced last year. So I think the truth is somewhere in the middle with him.
Yeah, that's fair. And it seems like you mentioned, like, he's a guy that in fantasy, maybe we can be more excited about than what this charting shows. He plays on the Bills. I guess the only way you get buried here, right, is if they bring in Hopkins and then Davis doesn't play anymore in two waters. Like, that's the only way I see you really.
Yeah, like if his quarterback is not Josh Allen, that's tough. Yeah. But his quarterback is Josh Allen. So it's fine where he's going and viewing him in that way.
Awesome. Well, we would love to, chat about wide receivers all day here. I could do this for two and more hours, but yeah, we basically have. Matt, that was a ton of fun. I know you've mentioned that you're still charting some players. I guess tell the people what else is coming out on Reception Perception the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so a lot of like some of the bigger name veterans who are not already on the site will be up on the site next Monday, and then I'm gonna try to hit 80 players. Like I said, I don't have time necessarily to go back and chart Josh Gordon's like epic season, but I'm trying to hit 80 players added to the site between NFL players and rookies by week one. So a robust database that continues to be added to is what you can find at receptionperception.com. But like I said, a lot of the, you know, Cooper Kupp type players and then some guys like, Christian Kirk and Chris Godwin, like all across the board, guys who aren't up on the site yet. Next Monday and the entire next week is when I'm going to try to hit those big name veterans.
Cool. Can I ask one thing? Are we going to get Rashid Shaheed in Reception Perception?
I would almost guarantee it I'm hitting 80 guys, he's going to, because there he's in the in-season tracker right now, the two games he had last year. And I kind of think he's pretty good. Like, I think Olave is in a great situation where he has a functional quarterback and the guys around him are just good enough to keep defense. Like, even with or without Michael Thomas, like I think Shaheed and Juwan Johnson, like Foster Moreau and all the running backs that got there are just good enough for the offense to be of high quality, but not enough to threaten his like target share, basically. Yeah, exactly.
I like that. Pat, what's going on for you at Legendary Upside?
Took some time off last week, so gonna be writing and trying to get an article out by the end of the week on some running back success rate stuff. Wrap up that series I'm doing over there. But you know, best ball rankings, underdog rankings, been updated regularly, so go check them out. So yeah, a lot of drafting coming up.
Good stuff, Davis. Same to you. A lot of drafting.
Same deal. A lot of drafting. Posted best ball ranks on the Patreon Takecast. Have dynasty ranks there as well. About to go do a dynasty pod with Pat. We're finishing up our magnum opus on dynasty rankings. And yeah, we'll be the Sports Grid Fantasy Football podcast feed is going to be a lot more active in the next 60 days because we're getting down to the nitty gritty, and we're very soon. We're about to leave the theater of the absurd that has been this program for the last 6 months, where we just think about what ADPs should be. And now we're about to get real life events of real life humans interacting and then dictating what we do on our phone screens with these drafts. So I'm pretty excited for that.
I'm excited as well. Well, thanks again, Matt, for joining. That was awesome. We will be back next week for ADP Chasing. See you guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.